Talk 94.9 WSJM. You're listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Tuesday edition of the show. I am your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you for the program. This is, of course, the show where we have longer conversations about things you may have heard about recently on WSJM News. If it's come up in our news coverage, it will come up on Our Take, but in a more extended format. We have longer conversations with the folks who are in the know or making things happen here in Michigan's great Southwest. And today we have several guests, several things to talk about on the show. We will talk with the director of the Van Buren Cass Health Department. They have some flu clinics going on, flu shot clinics, I should say. Clinics where you can get the flu shot, not where you can get the flu. And the health department up in Van Buren County, they're still advising people to get that flu shot. Health officials still urge everyone to do so. They say it's the best way to protect yourself. So we'll hear about that on today's show. We'll also check in with a candidate for state senate here in Michigan's great Southwest. I have had a chance to catch up with Ian Haight. He is the Democrat who has announced he's running for state senator John Prose's seat. Because next year, Prose, he's term limited out of office. He won't be back in Lansing next year. And, of course, yesterday, Al Pasulka announced he's not running for that seat. So, as of right now, as far as I know, no Republicans have announced. But we do have a Democrat. It is Ian Haight. And we'll talk with him on today's program. And also today, we'll learn about how the Baroda Fire Department recently honored some of their longtime volunteers. Volunteer firefighters were saluted at a special dinner the Baroda Fire Department held. So, we'll learn about that on today's show. And of course, last night, Benton Harbor City Commissioners met. I was there. I'll tell you some of what happened at the meeting. And if you'd like to weigh in on something that we have discussed on the show, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. Right now, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk with the Van Buren Cass Health Department Director. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Stick around. We will be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Tuesday edition of the program. I hope your week has gotten off to a good start thus far. Right now, I thought I'd tell you what happened last night at the Benton Harbor City Commission meeting, or at least I'll tell you some of it. There was a whole lot on the agenda last night for city commissioners. And so one of the things they talked about was, this has come up previously, a home rehab program. The city's community development department wants to partner with the Southwest Michigan Community Action Agency to administer a home rehabilitation program. This program uses federal HUD money. It's community development block grant money. And what it does is it offers residents a chance to get no-interest, low-payment loans to do home repairs. And, of course, you have to qualify. Well, the city hasn't been running this program since 2011 because they simply don't have the staff to administer something like it. So at a meeting last month, the idea was floated to team up with the Southwest Michigan Community Action Agency for this. Commissioners last month tabled the matter, but it came up again last night. City Mayor Pro Tem Dwayne Seitz, he said that a committee meeting was held recently where the Community Action Agency talked about how they would run the program, and he was satisfied with what he heard. So last night, commissioners approved working with the Southwest Michigan Community Action Agency. It will administer the home rehab program, but under the authority of the city's community development department. Mayor Marcus Muhammad said last night the task of helping residents fix housing problems cannot be further delayed. He said the city's community development director will oversee the program, so they'll still have control over it.
We're trying to move it forward and do the right thing, take the recommendation of the director, keep our eyes open, but work with her, support her, and more importantly, let's get some rehab done.
So there you go. Last night they approved this partnership with the Southwest Michigan Community Action Agency to run the program for the first time since 2011. As noted, Mayor Pro Tem Dwayne Seats was satisfied with the presentation he heard from the Community Action Agency recently.
So now it's time to move forward. We had it in the committee. We came through. Community Action came through.
The first year of funding for this program is $170,000, so they approved that last night. Also last night, they did multiple things related to the city's new income tax. New income tax is now in place in Benton Harbor. It's 1% for city residents and 0.5% for people who just work in the city. And it's expected to generate something like $2 million a year for the city. Well, this is a big deal. And it's a lot of work to implement something like this. City Manager Darwin Watson has been very busy trying to prepare for the implementation of the new income tax. Last night, commissioners saw the results of some of that. First of all, they were asked to approve the purchase of some software to administer the tax. It doesn't come cheap. It's $65,000, but they approved it. They had to. And then they also approved hiring a company called Secant Technologies to do a security assessment for the city so it can protect the personal info of the people who pay the tax. This is something that requires extra security, cybersecurity, said City Manager Darwin Watson.
The level of security that we have is that of the military or above.
So the cost of that contract is $14,000. City Manager Watson said there will be more purchases like that coming down soon enough as they prepare to start collecting the tax, because the first withholdings for the income tax in Benton Harbor are supposed to begin this month. And so there's more purchases coming and more information on that front soon to be learned. In fact, they've got a meeting set for this Thursday at 6 p.m. at City Hall for residents to come and learn more about the income tax. At 6 p.m. Thursday, City Hall, they will have the income tax administrators from the city of Walker and Grand Rapids on hand to talk with people and discuss how it works. Also last night, final thing that I'll tell you about is the City Commission voted to take a flying leap into the internet age and start streaming their meetings. They authorized the city manager to spend up to $5,000 to purchase equipment to stream the meetings online, which should be interesting. You too can experience the excitement of a city commission meeting without leaving the comfort of your living room once they implement this. The city manager said by the end of the month he'll have all the answers for how they can do that. We'll keep you filled in. Speaking of the city manager, there is a special meeting set for this Wednesday, tomorrow, at 7 p.m. for the city manager's contract to be reviewed. Last night they did the evaluation of the city manager in closed session, so we'll see what happens at tomorrow's meeting at 7 o'clock at City Hall to discuss Watson's contract. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Right now I thought we'd check in with the director of the Van Buren Cass Health Department. He's still urging people to get the flu vaccine, and to that end, the health department is holding a couple of flu shot clinics this month. Actually, this week, I chatted with Van Buren Cass Medical Director Larry Weil about this. So let's hear that conversation now. Okay, Dr. Weil, so just to start off, the flu this year, it has been worse around the country and in Southwest Michigan, correct, than a normal year?
Yes, it has been the worst we've seen in about 10 years.
Okay, and so it seems like it's a bit late in the year, though, to be holding a flu shot clinic.
It's still not too late to get your flu shot, but it is a little later in the year than we normally do, but we offer flu shots up until the end of the flu season. But right now, with everything going on, the severity of the flu, it still offers protection, and we're encouraging people to get their flu shot.
All right, so to that end, the Van Buren Cass Health Department holding some flu shot clinics this week. One of them's going on today at the health department office in Hartford, running through the end of a business. And then there's one on Thursday, also in Hartford, and then one tomorrow in Dowagiac. What do people need to know about showing up to one of these clinics?
It's available all day. We are closed over the lunch hour from 12 to 1, but from 9 a.m. to 12 and from 1 to 4. And for a lot of people, if we do participate with the VFC program, which is Vaccines for Children program, which provides no-cost vaccine to eligible children 6 months to 18 years of age. And we also are open to Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And we take private insurance and we take self-pay. So we work hard not to turn anybody away.
Okay, this is so people can receive the flu vaccine. The vaccine this year was a bit less effective than it normally would be, though.
This year it was not quite as effective as last year. They're talking about 30% overall effectiveness, with down to 17% with the effectiveness against the severe strain, the H H2 and 3 or H3N2 strain. If you look at that, though, that's just looking at people that get the flu. But if you get the flu and you've had your flu shot, your symptoms are a lot less. In many cases, they're a lot milder. You don't have the severe complications. And if I would put that to you this way, saying, gosh, wear your seatbelt in your car and you have a 30% chance of not dying and a greater chance of not being as injured, would you wear your seatbelt if you had a 30% chance of not dying from not being injured from your car accident? I think most people would say I'd wear the seatbelt.
Hmm. Okay.
Or if I told you on your way home that pick up a lottery ticket, you have 30% chance of it being effective and being a winner, it'd probably be a big line to buy a lottery ticket.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So the when people say it's not effective, it's still effective. It still helps pass it on, or it still helps so you don't pass it on to other people. It helps build up your immunity, and we are very much still encouraging getting your flu shot this year.
Right. If there was a lottery ticket with 30% odds of winning, I think that'd be the best odds you could possibly get. When we look at the vaccination rate around Southwest Michigan, do we have an idea of just roughly what percentage of the population actually has received this vaccine?
They don't track. We don't track that, okay. So I don't know, because people could be getting it at Walgreens and different places. Yeah. But there's still a lot of people that feel like, number one, you can get the flu from the vaccine, which you can't. Number two is, gosh, I need to build up my immunity naturally, and that's not by not getting the vaccine and being exposed to it. And actually, the studies are really clear that you get better immunity by getting the vaccine. It helps build up your immunity by getting the vaccine, not by not getting the vaccine. So there's a lot of myths out there regarding this vaccination.
We're talking with the director of the Van Buren Cass Health Department. So, Dr. Weil, if someone does get the flu, what's your advice to them?
Number one, stay home.
Mm-hmm.
Most people with the flu have mild illness, although this year it's been a little more. But stay home and do the things our moms used to tell us to do. You know, lots of fluids, you rest, you treat the symptoms. You can, if your fever goes up, you can take acetaminophen, ibuprofen, and stay away from other people. You know, cover your cough, wash your hands. We do advise people to stay home, stay away from work for at least 24 hours until after your fever is gone, except to get medical care. And there are high-risk people who have to be real careful. The high-risk people are, kids under 5, people over 65, and people with certain medical conditions, people that are immunocompromised,
mm-hmm.
People with asthma. Those people may need to see their doctor. For most people, they don't need to see their doctor for the flu symptoms.
Okay.
And we definitely are not encouraging people to go to the emergency room unless they have certain red flag symptoms.
Okay, that was Dr. Larry Weil, director of the Van Buren Cass Health Department, reminding everyone you should get a flu shot. Health officials still recommend that. Even though it's pretty late in the season, the health department in Van Buren and Cass counties has a couple of flu shot clinics going on this week. One of them was today in Hartford. It should be over by now, though, but you got another chance. There will be one tomorrow in Dowagiac at the health department office there from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. The place closes for lunch during the noon hour. Then on Thursday in Hartford at the health department office, they will have another flu shot clinic. They recommend you get it. It's about 30% effective. As Dr. Weil noted there, if someone told you had a 30% chance of winning a big lottery jackpot, you'd play. So it's his advice that you go there and get that shot. Or call your doctor about it. It's not too expensive, and it's the main way that health officials recommend you avoid the flu this winter. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. Right now it's time for a break here on Our Take. When we come back, we will talk with a candidate for state senate here in Michigan's great Southwest, the first candidate to announce to run for the seat, which will soon be vacated by State Senator John Prose, announced over the weekend. I have had a chance to catch up with him. We will chat next segment. with Ian Haight. And if you'd like to weigh in on something we've discussed, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in here to this Tuesday edition of the show. The week has landed. Right now, for this segment of the show, I thought we'd learn about the first candidate to announce that he's running for state senate here in Michigan's Great Southwest, 21st District. This is the district which is represented by State Senator John Prose in Lansing right now, but Senator Prose will be term limited out of office the end of this year. So it's a scramble for candidates to announce. An open seat will soon be available. And over the weekend, the first candidate to announce for this state Senate seat announced his, well, candidacy. That's Ian Haight. He's a former clerk for Hager Township. He's also served on a fire department board. I had a chance to talk with him yesterday. Now, he is a Democrat. He is a Democrat. We have no, as far as I know, Republicans that have yet announced. Yesterday's former state representative Al Pasholka announced he won't be running for the seat, which was a surprise. So we'll see if who does end up announcing that they're running. But I've had a chance to talk to Democratic candidate Ian Haight. He's a St. Joe resident, used to be the clerk in Hager Township. Let's hear that conversation now. All right, Ian, so you want to be our state senator. Tell us a bit about yourself. Are you from around here originally?
Yeah. So I grew up in Southwest Michigan, both St. Joe and then Hartford. I went to Kalamazoo College and got my bachelor's there, political science and education. Then I went to Wayne State and got my master's in information science.
So you're an educator. Are you a teacher at a local school?
Oh, no. So I was teaching, but then once I got my master's, I moved more into educational technology. So at the moment, I work down in Berry and Risa, and I support all of Cass and all of Berry in educational technology.
Okay, so you've announced you're running for state senate. What makes you want to run?
You know, so obviously, you know, this 2016 election was kind of a catalyst for a lot of people. You know, and I've thought about it before, and it was always like, well, that's something I'll do later in life. But, you know, this election kind of just seen some of the outrage on just one side, and then kind of, you know, some also support for new ideas coming out after this made me think that this is the right time to run. This is the right time to harness that energy, kind of use that to kind of build more of a forward-thinking Michigan that, you know, benefits all of us. It makes us kind of proud to be Michiganders. I think a lot of us were really disappointed that Michigan ended up going to Trump after having supported Bernie in the primary.
I've heard that a lot. So did you support Bernie in the primary?
I did, yes.
Okay, so when you look at Michigan government, what would your top priorities be if you were elected to the state Senate?
Sure. So my priorities, obviously, you know, healthcare is huge, and there isn't a ton we can do at the state level with that. As you know, it's more of the federal talk going on right now. But there still are, you know, provisions in there for, you know, expanding things like Medicare and Medicaid. And, but then after that, obviously jobs are very important. I worry that Michigan, and this ties in with education too, you know, the governor has been very pro-business and, you know, slashed school budgets about 8 years ago, really kind of put everybody in the red for several years. Good people had to be let go. And, you know, so our education has really gone down in that time. And just the other day, Amazon, you know, announced their second headquarters list, and they actually came out and said the reason they didn't pick Detroit, or they didn't accept, you know, Detroit, was that Michigan's education standards have gotten really low, and they didn't think that there would be enough of a local talent pool in Michigan because of that. So that was kind of a shocker to me. I mean, it wasn't because I've seen it happen, having worked in education, but it was interesting to see that Amazon actually come out and say that, kind of say what people have been thinking for a while. And then I looked at some of the studies, and yeah, you know, Michigan, just look at our test scores, look at a number of college graduates in certain areas, and then the number of college graduates that get degrees in Michigan, because we have good schools. Obviously, our state schools are really good here, but those people flee Michigan the first second they can and get jobs elsewhere. So we're not able to retain talent in Michigan. Part of that has been, you know, because we've been so pro-business, we've kind of lost focus on the rest of it that actually does support business in the long run.
All right, so you want to focus on education. You mentioned jobs there, increased education funding. Any sort of, you know, pet interest that you bring to Lansing if you were elected?
Nothing pet project there. one thing about me is I'm very level-headed, and I like to get all the information before I come to a conclusion or put anything forward. So I'm not actually going into this with a lot of preconceived notions. You know, a lot of people, they say, here's my plan. This is what I'm going to do in the Senate, and I'm going to pass all this legislation. And I think that's really short-sighted because they haven't been there. They haven't heard from all these people. They're taking their preconceived notions into it. I think that's a bad place to start from. I'd rather start from a place where I say, hey, I'm willing to listen. You know, because I think a good politician listens twice as much as they talk. And that doesn't happen very often, but it should. So, you know, when I go up there, like I said, I've worked in education. When I go up there, when we start talking about some education plans, I'm going to call up some superintendents and say, hey, give me your thoughts on this. I'm not going to pretend that I know everything about education. You know, I'm very big on gathering information before we make a decision.
Okay, and this is, of course, Southwest Michigan. This is a pretty Republican area. I've never seen a Democratic state senator here, but you're sensing that maybe in light of Donald Trump's election, Democrats might be sufficiently energized this time?
I do. Believe it or not, so this 21st district being, you know, Barry and Cass and St. Joseph counties, Obama did win here. So it isn't always Republican. Like I said, Obama did win. However, the midterms do definitely tend to be Republican. But if you look at what's been happening, just recently in Wisconsin, you know, a heavy Trump district flipped in a state legislature seat. And I see that happening here. I've seen a bunch of people, Democrats that maybe wouldn't normally come out and vote, are very, very psyched up about this. And even more importantly, that middle 20% of independent voters, I've seen them come out and be like, wow, you know, we've been lied to, and you know, they've started to realize that their vote matters, and they need to come out for this next election. So I do think it is possible. I'm not one for lost causes. So if I didn't think there was a chance of winning, I would not be running.
We're speaking with Ian Haight. He's the first Democrat to announce he's running for the 21st District State Senate seat. So what do you think of John Prose?
I think he's done some good things. I like a lot of his criminal justice reform. So I'm not running against him in that sense, you know, that I'm going to go and undo everything that John has done. I think he's done a fine job representing us. However, you know, some of his ideas and just kind of the legislature in general having been dominated by Republicans for the last 8 years, they've kind of gone a little bit off track of what I would like to see for, you know, like things like education and healthcare too, unfortunately.
All right, we're talking to Ian Haight, former Hager Township clerk, Democrat running for state Senate here in the 21st District. Ian, is there anything else that you'd want to tell people about yourself or about your candidacy and why you want to be their state senator?
You know, my website's ianhaightforsenate.com. Mm-hmm. If people are interested in kind of seeing more about, you know, my values and, you know, who I am and what I'd like to represent for them.
Okay, that's Ian Haight, former Hager Township clerk running for state senator here in Michigan's great Southwest. Yesterday we learned former state rep Al Pasholka is not running for that seat that state senator John Prose is about to vacate because of term limits. When I told Ian that, his response was, holy moly, because that was a surprise yesterday, but I cut that part out. Anyway, that's Ian Haight, now running to be your state senator. News Talk 94.9 WSJM, this is Our Take, and I mentioned earlier Benton Harbor City Commissioners met last night. They're not the only city commission that met last night. The City Council in South Haven also held a meeting, and we had a representative there to be present for a South Haven City Council. Last night, what they did was they gave approval to a music festival, which will be held this July at Riverfront Park. Here's a spokesperson, Ben Holt from Foundry Hall, telling us about it.
This summer with Rhythm on the River, July 20th and 21st, it's turned into a two-day music festival. And it's going from 5 to 10 p.m. each night down at the riverfront. And, you know, we're ending the music at 10. The beer garden's going to stay open until 11.
So with a successful icebreaker festival right behind them, City Council is moving forward on upcoming events. The city will host We Care Island Sit on the Phoenix Street and Welcome Island on February 24th as part of We Care's Warm Your Heart Month. That was discussed last night. And then in July, it'll be Rhythm on the River. That's a festival of music, beer, and food. Here's more from Ben Holt of Foundry Hall describing the event.
Wide variety of all Michigan bands, all original music. We're going to have craft beer down there, and we're hoping for some local restaurants to partner with us.
Holt told the City Council last night the sound checks will be limited to an hour. Music will end at 10 p.m. each night. He respects those who live near Riverfront Park. And that's not the only event approved by South Haven City Council members last night. The South Haven Steelheaders Fishing Tournament was approved. That takes place in May. They also approved the South Haven Art Fair, which is in June, and then the National Blueberry Festival in August. That's a big one. Council members last night also raved about the success of the Icebreakers Festival, which just wrapped up. And that was the discussion last night for South Haven City Council. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Right now we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll chat with the Berrien County Health Department about safe infant sleep and you. The health department has some tips for everyone that the parents need to be aware of. If you'd like to weigh in on something we've discussed, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E @wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in. We're getting close here to the end of today's program, this Tuesday edition of the show. This is, of course, a show where we have longer conversations with things you may have heard about on WSJM News. We air the full conversations with folks who are in the know or making things happen here in Michigan's great Southwest. And right now, I thought I'd tell you about something that happened at the Baroda Fire Department recently. Last month, they held an appreciation dinner. They do this each year. Everyone gathered at the Round Barn to salute volunteer firefighters in Baroda. And in particular, they were saluting some firefighters who have served for a long period of time. The department's Griffin Ott told me one firefighter in particular was being honored at that dinner.
This year, we are very excited because one of our firefighters has reached a milestone that no one in our department's history has ever reached before. Firefighter John Chavilla will be receiving his 50-year award pin.
That's 50 years with the Baroda Fire Department for John Chavilla. And Griffin Ott with the department told me a little bit more about Mr. Chavilla, who is a local barber. He has a shop on First Street.
Oftentimes when there's a fire, you'll see a sign in his barber chair that says, "Gone to a fire." And he's been known to even leave people with half a haircut in his chair to go help fight a fire.
So that's Baroda Fire Department's Griffin Ott. He was telling me at this dinner they also saluted a couple of other firefighters who've been with the department for quite a while.
Assistant Chief Guy Tallis and Captain Jeff Gall will each be honored for 30 years of service. Firefighter Donnie Johnson will mark 10 years of service, and five-year awards go to Andrew Adkin and Sarah Schmaltz.
That dinner was actually held last month, but I chatted with the fire department's Griffin Ott about that. He's sort of their spokesperson. And I asked him, so what is why is it that so many people serve for so long with the Baroda Fire Department?
Baroda is a very special spot. We have a very tight-knit community, and we have a great place where learning and advancement is fostered and a great family-like atmosphere. And we know the people that we're serving most times, and it makes it rewarding to help those that we know when they're in need.
So Griffin was telling me the department has 21 firefighters with a total of 354 years of experience, all are volunteers, and they held their appreciation dinner last month at the Round Barn. And indeed, if you're interested in being a volunteer firefighter in your community, that is one excellent way to make a difference if you're up to it. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. To close out today's edition of Our Take, I thought we'd check in with the Berrien County Health Department. I've had spokesperson Jillian Conrad in here, and she was talking with me about safe infant sleep. The health department's trying to get this information out to new parents. They always try to get this information out to new parents. So Jillian told me about the ABCs of safe infant sleep. Let's hear that conversation now. All right, Jillian, so you want to talk about safe infant sleep. This is something that's been brought to the forefront recently by the release of some federal statistics. Is that right?
Yeah, so there was a recent CDC vital signs report about infant safe sleep and the importance of infant safe sleep. Some new statistics were just released on just the types of unsafe sleep conditions in which babies were found, unresponsive, some fatal instances recently. In addition to that, there is a new report out from the Michigan Department of Community Health about infant safe sleep, and it's just a good time to pick up that conversation again. It's something that the Berrien County Health Department is always trying to continue to educate our community on, ensure that new parents, that caregivers know the basics of infant safe sleep and can prevent those preventable deaths.
So not having a baby properly positioned or just not putting a baby to sleep in the proper way can result in deaths. What are some of the mistakes that some parents make?
Sure. So when we're talking about unsafe sleep deaths, those are any deaths of an infant under the age of one where the sleep environment was likely to have contributed to the death. So a lot of times you might hear these called SIDS or sudden infant unexplained deaths, possibly suffocation deaths. All of those could have unsafe sleep situations that have contributed to that death. So in the state of Michigan, sleep-related infant deaths are actually the leading cause of death amongst infants less than 1 year old. So it really is a top priority for us to make sure that we are addressing, you know, those common mistakes that people might be making, knowledge that they thought that they had from a previous time before some of the current recommendations were released. And this is all in an effort to reduce that infant mortality rate. You know, here in Berrien County, we do have a very high infant mortality rate in comparison with some of the other counties in Michigan and with the country. As far as sleep-related infant deaths go, in Berrien County, our rate is higher, much higher than the state of Michigan. So this is obviously something that remains top concern for us. So some of those common mistakes that new parents might make or that caregivers might be making is placing their child or the infant in one of those situations that is deemed unsafe. We know that the safest place for a baby to sleep is, it's pretty simple, you follow the ABCs, so alone, on their back, in a crib. And that crib should not have anything else in it other than a tight-fitting sheet. So no crib bumpers, no stuffed animals, no blankets. Babies don't need those sorts of things. They do have approved safe sleep sacks that you can put your baby in that will keep your baby warm without being something that is restrictive or could, you know, contribute to suffocation or go over their face or anything like that. So that can keep a baby warm if you're worried about, you know, keeping your baby warm during the winter nights here. But so alone on their back in a crib, those are the basics of safe sleep.
And there should not be anything in the crib. Well, when you say alone, that covers that. There shouldn't Correct. Be any toys or anything like that in
there? No toys, no stuffed animals. Babies don't need that. And when we say alone, that means that they shouldn't be sleeping with a parent in an adult bed. They shouldn't be sleeping with other children, other babies, toddlers, other kids. And, you know, bed sharing is not recommended for safe sleep. What is recommended is room sharing. So the recommendation is that you share your room with your infant, and this can help prolong a breastfeeding relationship. You can stay close to your baby. Your baby can kind of smell you, the mother, the dad, and, you know that they're close to their parents, but in their own separate crib, in their own separate space, and not sharing that bed with the parent, because that is, you know, a lot of the time when we see suffocations happen, it's when they're in an adult bed with the parents or potentially sleeping on a couch or on a chair, a mattress on the floor, just places that are not safe where adults can roll over. It's easy. I mean, I don't know about you, but I roll around in my sleep and I don't know about it. So it's just not safe to sleep next to your baby.
Oh, sure. I've fallen out of bed a few times. So you mentioned the numbers for Berrien County are high. Do you have statistics there?
I do, yes. So in the last 5 or 6 years or so, we've had over 25 sleep-related infant deaths, which when you think about those numbers, it doesn't seem like a lot. However, when you put it into perspective, you know, that's a whole kindergarten classroom full of Berrien County children that did not make it past their first birthday due to a very, preventable cause. And that's tragic. You know, any of these infant losses due to a preventable cause is truly a tragedy and one that we want to continue to prevent. So our rate of sleep-related infant deaths in Berrien County is 2.2 deaths per 1,000 live births. To put that into some additional perspective, in the state of Michigan, that overall rate for sleep-related infant deaths is only 1.3 deaths per 1,000 live births. So we have a rate that is pretty much double what the state rate is, and that puts us at about the fifth worst county in Michigan. So it's not great. And, you know, there's a lot more that we can be doing to educate our new parents our caregivers, you know, grandparents, foster parents, anybody who might be caring for an infant. So just to talk about some of the things that the Berrien County Health Department has done over the years, with some assistance through the Raising Up Healthy Babies Task Force, which is a task force of Berrien County organizations and collaborators and community members who are interested in reducing the infant mortality rate. There's been some really wonderful work done over the last few years doing education. We've done some community baby showers. We've worked with babysitting classes over at Lakeland Health. We are really making an effort to make sure that all caregivers, foster parents, grandparents, anybody who might be caring for an infant, including all of those new parents, are educated about the proper way to sleep safely with their infant, or how to make sure that their infant is sleeping safely. Mm. So there has been a lot of really good work done, and we will continue to do that. And, you know, being a new parent is really, really hard. It is exhausting. You know, you're sleep deprived and you're around the clock taking care of that infant. And it can be so tempting to, you know, bring your baby into bed with you or put your baby, you know, on your chest and fall asleep on the couch when that seems like the easiest thing to do in that moment. But it's just not a risk that you should be taking. It's not a risk that we want parents to take. And, you know, there are a lot of products out on the market these days that make it kind of confusing for new parents. You know, there's different bouncer seats, there's rocking mechanisms, there's little bumper thingies that you can put in your bed with you. And a lot of these market themselves as being safe for infants to sleep in. And that's just not the case. The FDA has not approved most of these mechanisms, these little devices for babies to be sleeping in. And a lot of them have been linked to infant deaths and cases of infant deaths. You know, babies, the way that their heads are positioned when they're sleeping, kind of propped up, can be really dangerous. Their necks just don't have quite enough muscle to them to hold them, their airways clear. So it's very easy for a baby's head to slump to one side or the other and cause asphyxiation or suffocation. So we do recommend, you know, always on your back in a crib by yourself, those ABCs, and not to put your baby to sleep in any sort of other unapproved device like those rocking things or the bouncer seats or a car seat, things like that.
Okay, so just a quick reminder there, the ABCs of safe infant sleep, they are the baby should be alone,
yep,
on its back,
yes,
and in a crib.
Excellent. Good job, Andrew.
If anyone needs any more information, what should they do?
They can definitely visit us on our website. It's www.bchdmi.org. We've got some great information there, as well as links to both the CDC site and the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, where those two recent reports have just been released. So if anybody's interested in joining the Raising Up Healthy Babies Infant Mortality Reduction Task Force, give us a call, and we'd be happy to hook you up with that and answer any other questions that new parents, caregivers, grandparents, anybody taking care of an infant might have.
All right. That was Berrien County Health Department spokesperson Jillian Conrad talking with me not too long ago about safe infant sleep. They always try to remind new parents of these simple rules. Remember your ABCs. If you are confused about that, call the health department. They're always happy to inform the public on that issue. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. That does it for today's edition of Our Take. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we will talk with David Matthews, president of Southwestern Michigan College, about a large donation they recently received. If you'd like to weigh in on something we've discussed on the show, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. We should be back tomorrow, same time, same station. In the meantime, have a fantastic rest of your day.